Early, I wore a suit, and a knapsack over a three-piece suit would be a preposterous sight. "Put your coat on over the knapsack," he said. "It's better that people think you're a hunchback than to ruin your body carrying all this around." He urged me to get out my notebook and write. He seemed to be making a deliberate effort to put me at ease. I complained again about the feeling of physical discomfort and the strange sense of unhappiness I was experiencing. Don Juan laughed and said, "You're beginning to learn." We then had a long conversation. He said that Mezcalito, by allowing me to play with him, had pointed me out as a chosen man, and that, although he was baffled by the omen because I was not an Indian, he was going to pass on to me some secret knowledge. He said that he had had a benefactor himself, who taught him how to become a man of knowledge. I sensed that something dreadful was about to happen. The revelation that I was his chosen man, plus the unquestionable strangeness of his ways, and the devastating effect that peyote had had on me, created a state of unbearable apprehension and indecision. But Don Juan disregarded my feelings, and recommended that I should only think of the wonder of Mezcalito playing with me. "Think about nothing else," he said. "The rest will come to you of itself." He stood up and patted me gently on the head, and said in a very soft voice, "I am going to teach you how to become a warrior, in the same manner I've taught you how to hunt. I must warn you, though. Learning how to hunt has not made you into a hunter, nor would learning how to become a warrior make you one." I experienced a sense of frustration, a physical discomfort that bordered on anguish. I complained about the vivid dreams and nightmares I was having. He seemed to deliberate for a moment and sat down again. "They're weird dreams," I said. "You've always had weird dreams," he retorted. "I'm telling you, this time, they're truly more weird than anything I've ever had." "Don't concern yourself. They're only dreams. Like the dreams of any ordinary dreamer, they don't have power. So what's the use of worrying about them or talking about them?" "They bother me, Don Juan. Isn't there something I can do to stop them?" "Nothing. Let them pass," he said. "Now it's time for you to become accessible to power, and you're going to begin by tackling dreaming." The tone of voice he used when he said dreaming made me think that he was using the word in a very particular fashion. I was pondering about a proper question to ask when he began to talk again. "I've never told you about dreaming, because until now I was only concerned with teaching you how to be a hunter," he said. "A hunter is not concerned with the manipulation of power. Therefore, his dreams are only dreams. They might be poignant, but they are not dreaming. A warrior, on the other hand, seeks power, and one of the avenues to power is dreaming. You may say that the difference between a hunter and a warrior is that a warrior is on his way to power, while a hunter knows nothing or very little about it. The decision as to who can be a warrior and who can only be a hunter is not up to us. That decision is in the realm of the powers that guide men. That's why your playing with Mezcalito was such an important omen. Those forces guided you to me. They took you to that bus depot, remember? Some clown brought you to me. A perfect omen, a clown pointing you out. So I taught you how to be a hunter. And then the other perfect omen, Mezcalito himself, playing with you. See what I mean?" His weird logic was overwhelming. His words created visions of myself succumbing to something awesome and unknown, something which I hadn't bargained for, and which I had not conceived existed, even in my wildest fantasies. "What do you propose I should do?" I asked. "Become accessible to power. Tackle your dreams," he replied. "You call them dreams because you have no power. A warrior, being a man who seeks power, doesn't call them dreams. He calls them real."
"You mean he takes his dreams as being reality?"
"He doesn't take anything as being anything else. What you call dreams are real for a warrior. You must understand that a warrior is not a fool. A warrior is an immaculate hunter who hunts power. He's not drunk or crazed, and he has neither the time nor the disposition to bluff or to lie to himself or to make a wrong move. The stakes are too high for that. The stakes are his trimmed, orderly life, which he's taken so long to tighten and perfect. He's not going to throw that away by making some stupid miscalculation, by taking something for being something else. Dreaming is real for a warrior, because in it he can act deliberately. He can choose and reject. He can select from a variety of items those which lead to power. And then he can manipulate them and use them, while in an ordinary dream, he cannot act deliberately."
"Do you mean then, Don Juan, that dreaming is real?"
"Of course it's real.
As real as what we're doing now.
If you want to compare things, I can say that it's perhaps more real. In dreaming, you have power. You can change things. You may find out countless concealed facts. You can control whatever you want."
Don Juan's premises always had appealed to me at a certain level. I could easily understand his liking the idea that one could do anything in dreams, but I couldn't take him seriously. The jump was too great. We looked at each other for a moment. His statements were insane, and yet he was, to the best of my knowledge, one of the most level-headed men I had ever met. I told him that I couldn't believe he took his dreams to be reality. He chuckled, as if he knew the magnitude of my untenable position. Then he stood up, without saying a word, and walked inside his house. I sat, for a long time, in a state of stupor, until he called me to the back of his house. He'd made some corn gruel, and handed me a bowl. I asked him about the time when one was awake. I wanted to know if he called it anything in particular. But he didn't understand or didn't want to answer.
"What do you call this? What we're doing now?"
I asked, meaning that what we were doing was reality as opposed to dreams.
"I call it eating," he said, and contained his laughter.
"I call it reality," I said, "because our eating is actually taking place."
"Dreaming also takes place," he replied, giggling. "And so does hunting, walking, laughing."
I didn't persist in arguing. I couldn't, however, even if I stretched myself beyond my limits, accept his premise. He seemed to be delighted with my despair. As soon as we had finished eating, he casually stated that we were going to go for a hike, but we weren't going to roam in the desert in the manner we had done before.
"It's different this time," he said. "From now on, we're going to places of power. You're going to learn how to make yourself accessible to power."
I again expressed my turmoil. I said I wasn't qualified for that endeavor.
"Come on. You're indulging in silly fears," he said in a low voice, patting me on the back and smiling benevolently. "I've been catering to your hunter's spirit. You like to roam with me in this beautiful desert. It's too late for you to quit."
He began to walk into the desert chaparral. He signaled me with his head to follow him. I could have walked to my car and left, except that I liked to roam in that beautiful desert with him. I liked the sensation, which I experienced only in his company, that this was indeed an awesome, mysterious, yet beautiful world. As he said, I was hooked. Don Juan led me to the hills towards the east. It was a long hike. It was a hot day. The heat, however, which ordinarily would have been unbearable to me, was somehow unnoticeable. We walked for quite a distance into a canyon until Don Juan came to a halt and sat down in the shade of some boulders. I took some crackers out of my knapsack, but he told me not to bother with them. He said that I should sit in a prominent place. He pointed to a single, almost round boulder, 10 or 15 feet away, and helped me climb to the top. I thought he was also going to sit there, but instead, he just climbed part of the way in order to hand me some pieces of dry meat. He told me with a deadly serious expression that it was power meat, and should be chewed very slowly, and should not be mixed with any other food. He then walked back to the shaded area and sat down with his back against a rock. He seemed relaxed, almost sleepy. He remained in the same position until I had finished eating. Then he sat up straight and tilted his head to the right. He seemed to be listening attentively. He glanced at me two or three times, stood up abruptly, and began to scan the surroundings with his eyes the way a hunter would do. I automatically froze on the spot and only moved my eyes in order to follow his movements. Very carefully, he stepped behind some rocks, as if he were expecting game to come into the area where we were. I realized then that we were in a round, cove-like bend in the dry water canyon, surrounded by sandstone boulders. Don Juan suddenly came out from behind the rocks and smiled at me. He stretched his arms, yawned, and walked towards the boulder where I was. I relaxed my tense position and sat down. "What happened?" I asked in a whisper. He answered me, yelling that there was nothing around there to worry about. I felt an immediate jolt in my stomach. His answer was inappropriate, and it was inconceivable to me that he would yell unless he had a specific reason for it. I began to slide down from the boulder, but he yelled that I should stay there a while longer. "What are you doing?" I asked. He sat down and concealed himself between two rocks at the base of the boulder where I was, and then he said in a very loud voice that he had only been looking around because he thought he had heard something. I asked if he had heard a large animal. He put his hand to his ear and yelled that he was unable to hear me and that I should shout my words. I felt ill at ease yelling, but he urged me in a loud voice to speak up. I shouted that I wanted to know what was going on, and he shouted back that there was really nothing around there. He yelled, asking if I could see anything unusual from the top of the boulder. I said no, and he asked me to describe to him the terrain towards the south. We shouted back and forth for a while, and then he signaled me to come down. I joined him, and he whispered in my ear that the yelling was necessary to make our presence known, because I had to make myself accessible to the power of that specific waterhole. I looked around, but couldn't see the waterhole. He pointed that we were standing on it. "There's water here," he said in a whisper, "and also power. There's a spirit here, and we have to lure it out. Perhaps it'll come after you." I wanted to know more about the alleged spirit, but he insisted on total silence. He advised me to stay perfectly still and not let out a whisper or make the slightest movement to betray our presence. Apparently, it was easy for him to remain in complete immobility for hours. For me, however, it was sheer torture. My legs fell asleep, my back ached, and tension built up around my neck and shoulders. My entire body became numb and cold. I was in great discomfort when Don Juan finally stood up. He just sprung to his feet and extended his hand to me to help me stand up. As I was trying to stretch my legs, I realized the inconceivable easiness with which Don Juan had jumped up after hours of immobility. It took quite some time for my muscles to regain the elasticity needed for walking. Don Juan headed back for the house. He walked extremely slowly. He set up a length of 3 paces as the distance I should observe in following him. He meandered around the regular route and crossed it 4 or 5 times.